Shabbos versus the seriousness of saving lives. And we noted the imperative of looking after health is not only about life and death matters, but in all matters of health. We gave the Gemara in Yuma this discussion of how you know that Pikuach Nefesh overrides Shabbos. And now we get to something that is very curious and very challenging. And actually, when we did it first semester, I sort of raced through it. I just gave you the rule. But I realized that I should give you the background on it also. So this is going to be something that even those who took this first semester did not see and definitely should know. And it's the following principle. Overriding Shabbos to save lives doesn't only mean direct life-saving activity. It also means whatever is the standard of care for that kind of illness, including activities that don't necessarily save lives themselves. So we're going to see, you know, specific cases that, you know, that's what's going to come up here. But it's something that confuses people. In other words, I would have thought, you tell me saving lives override Shabbos. So if I have somebody, let's say, God forbid, by the way, I don't know if I said this the first week, but I'm going to say it very explicitly now. I'm not a doctor. I did not go to medical school. I do give you medical examples because you can't learn medical halacha without some kind of medical examples, and I do my best to make sure they're accurate. However, for actual medical information, go to a medical professional. Clear? Good? Understood? Okay. So we're going to talk about, I was going to say the following case. You have somebody who has a respiratory issue. Let's say they have pneumonia, RSV, COVID, something that is debilitating to the point where they're not able to breathe, okay? Generally speaking, it is understood that not being able to breathe is fatal. So what do we do to save the life of somebody who is unable to breathe? Well, if it's an obstruction, so we try to get rid of the obstruction, but sometimes it's because their lungs are not functioning at a proper level and they need help. That may mean putting them on some kind of a ventilator. Right? It may mean just a tube delivering oxygen. It may actually mean hooking them up to a ventilator. It may mean a tracheotomy. All sorts of different ways that you get the person breathing. That's what people usually think of when they think about things you would do to override Shabbos in order to save a life. It's very dramatic. It's very clearly life-saving. Without the machine, this person wasn't breathing. They were going to die. Now with the machine, there's air coming into their lungs. Hopefully oxygen gets through the body, through the brain. Now they're going to survive. But there are other actions that you would normally do in order to care for this person. Actions that may not be directly life-saving. So, for example, we take vital signs, right? Every period of time, and what that is, you know, what the protocol is may depend on the patient or the hospital or the unit or the staffing they have available for that matter. But let's say they say every hour we take their blood pressure. Taking the person's blood pressure is not directly life-saving, especially if their heart is not, you know, where the problem is. You could conjure up a situation in which it is life-saving. But the point is, even if it's not, even if the doctor says to you, this in and of itself is not life-saving, but this is how we treat somebody in the ICU, right? Then the answer is we do that for them on Shabbos, and we don't hesitate. That's the rule. So the question is, how do you know that? Right, I know from V'chai Bahem that we put the person on a ventilator, but how does that lead to other activities that are not directly life-saving? Is that clear? We understand the question? Right? Okay. I get nervous when people are typing a lot because I worry that means they're not hearing what I'm saying. So I'm not telling you not to take notes, but just checking to make sure people are following. Yeah, Rebecca. Okay. So in order to understand the following sources, we need to know about a term that is called maka shel chalal. Okay, maka, like the Eser Makos, right? We just read about them. Right? A maka does not mean a plague. A maka means getting hit. In this case, a maka means an injury. What does the term chalal mean in Hebrew? Sorry? Nope, that's chola. Chalal. Sorry, desecrate, can be. Yeah, you want to say that also? Okay. So it can sometimes mean that. Lechalel is from the language of chol, to make something mundane. But that's not what it means here. Chalal here refers to a space. Actually, in modern Hebrew, outer space is called the chalal. That's the term. But in this case, we don't mean outer space, we mean inner space. The space inside somebody's body is called also the halal inside the body. The term halal has many meanings. So the point for us is that a makashel halal is an internal injury. Today, if someone has an internal injury, we have lots of ways to analyze and figure out what's wrong, right? We have x-rays, we have MRIs, we have CAT scans. There's all sorts of stuff that we can do. There are ultrasounds. Back in the day, by which I mean, 2,000 years ago, if somebody had a makasha halal, an internal injury, what in the world were you going to do to diagnose it? You could look at external symptoms. You could ask them about their pain, right? But there isn't a whole lot you could really do in order to know what's going on inside. They did have autopsy. Autopsy exists and is discussed in the Gemara. It was controversial as to when it was allowed, when it wasn't allowed, and that might give some insight in terms of knowledge of patient, of what's going on inside somebody, but you really didn't know much. And therefore, if you had a circumstance in which somebody had a makash al halal, and we thought this might really be life or death, we had to err on the side of caution. Because what else are you going to do? Right? You're going to let the person die because, well, I don't know if what's going inside is dangerous. Practical case in which this could be an issue. Somebody falls down the steps, they bang their head, and they lose consciousness. Right? So they could have a concussion. They could have internal bleeding in their head, God forbid. Right? We don't know what the circumstance is. We're going to need to treat that extremely seriously. So that's an example of a case in which I don't know what's going on. And the rule is that I will do whatever I need to do in order to save their lives on the assumption that their life could really be in danger. Take a look at source number one on the sheet, please. For those who just joined the class, by the way, I hope you noticed on Canvas that I upload the source sheets. I expect everybody to download them from there and not come in expecting a printout. So this is from the Shulchan Aruch right here in source number one. Makasha eina shel halal. If there is an injury that is not internal, also known as external, nishalin babaki ubachole. So we'll ask an expert, we'll ask a doctor, we'll ask a nurse, somebody who is trained to know what's going on. We will ask the patient themselves, that's its own discussion about the patient's word being trusted. You don't override Shabbos until you hear from the doctor or the patient, this needs it. Or if one of them views it as a danger to life. In the event that it seems like this is dangerous, so then we're going to then we'll override Shabbos for it. Now, the Mishnah Berurah makes a comment on that. When it says at the end that it has to be sakanas nefashos, the Mishnah Berurah in source number two says tzarech lomar safek sakanas nefashos. It shouldn't just say if it turns out to be danger to life, even if it is possible danger to life. Rotza lomar meaning. Even if one of them says, maybe things are going to get worse, and therefore the person will be in danger, you also violate Shabbos. And he says, if you were to look at the Ramah, which I didn't bring you in source number one, he just has a note saying, hey, look at the laws of Yom Kippur. Why did the Ramah do that? Because in the laws of Yom Kippur, we talk about somebody who maybe shouldn't be fasting, but you don't know for sure. And the rule is you tell them to eat. And the same thing is true regarding life and death matters. So the first point that we're making right here in the Mishnah Berurah is if you're not sure about Pikuach Nefesh, assume the worst. Save their lives. Clear? Everyone got that? That's understood? Yes. It is absolutely still true today, but you use whatever systems of analysis you have in order to deal with it. In other words, it isn't a simple dichotomy now of, well, it's internal, it's external. Internal, I can't know. External, I can know. It doesn't work that way anymore. But I will be absolutely responsible to err on the side of caution. And, the case of the person who falls down the steps and bangs their head and so on, I'm still in the same boat that I was 2,000 years ago. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Remind me of your name.
Gali,
thank you.
Wait.
Please don't be insulted when I ask people's names.
Yeah, I'm not. Did the Shulchan Aruch just say the opposite? Like, we can't do anything to him until we ask him?
Correct. And that's why the Mishnah Berurah says it. The Mishnah Berurah, he's clarifying that that's not what the Shulchan Aruch meant.
What else could he have meant?
When he says, go back to the language there, shoot tzarech lechilul, right? That it needs violation of Shabbos. So that one of them views it as sakanas nefashos, he's saying that really means safek sakanas nefashos. It doesn't mean definite, it always meant safek. I could support the Mishnah Berurah from two points. One being just the text itself. The last words in the Mechaber, in Rav Yosef Karo there, are really redundant. Right? Meaning if you had ended the line, Ad Shiomer Echamehem Shu Tzarech Lechilul, right? Once one of them says it needs violation of Shabbos, that already tells me it's the Sakanas Nefashos case. Right? Why isn't there a period there? So I could argue that what he's doing is retranslating those last words to say when it says one of them views it as Sakanas Nefashos, that means suffix Sakanas Nefashos. That's what's actually being added. That would be one way. The other is because danger is never 100%. Right? The person's not dead. So therefore, I don't know for sure what's going to happen. So all Sakanas Nefashos cases really are suffix. Now, in another class or two, I'm going to have to modify that. Because suffix is a very big place, right? You have somebody who fell down the steps and might have a brain hemorrhage, right? That's a suffix sakanas nefashos. And then you have somebody who says, you know, I have a really bad cough and I don't know, you know, I'm concerned. Maybe it's a sign that I've got some kind of a lung disease or whatever it is. Like, is that also a suffix, right? There are lots of sfeikos. So we're going to have to figure out what level of suffix we're concerned for. But right now, the Mishnah Berurah takes it as a given that that last phrase in the Mechaber means suffix sakanas nefashos. Correct. Right.
So even, is it that we don't violate Shabbos unless one of them says that it's necessary? So
or both.
Or both, but we would leave a patient with no medical knowledge
right.
to say, hey, you know, I really want to get checked out.
Right. So this was what I meant to avoid by saying this is a whole other issue, because it is a complication. This question of trusting the patient. We have a basic principle, which I think is a pasuk in Mishlei, Lev Yodea Maras Nafsho. The heart knows its own bitterness, which we take to mean not an emotional statement of people know how miserable they are, but rather that people actually are aware when there's something wrong with them physically. They're conscious of it, and they can tell you that something is wrong. For certain types of medicine, that may be true. So that this is brought regarding Yom Kippur. When somebody says, no, I really need to eat, you know, they know their system. They know how their body reacts when they're hypoglycemic. They know that they're dehydrated. They can give you information. And even if, you know, the doctor looks at them and says, they can make it another few hours. We're not going to force them to do so. The patient says they need to eat, they're going to eat. That becomes questionable when, let's say, they're dealing with, you know, stage 2, stage 3 cancer, and they say, I need this. And you ask them, well, what exactly is the this that you need us to give you on Shabbos? And they say, I need penicillin. Like, we don't give penicillin for that. That's not a thing. But I need it. Like, so There are differences between patients in this regard in terms of what we're going to rely upon when they say, I need something. But it's not an issue that we're going to spend a whole lot of time on. We'll see it, I think, a little bit, but not too much. Yeah?
So, like, if you have someone on Shabbos that falls under, like, a Holoshe Ambosokona kind of category, but your nerves, like, could get worse, the mission where would they get in the car and in the hospital?
So that's a good question. We're going to get there. We're not there yet. The getting worse discussion is an important one that we're not quite at this point. It was in first semester. It'll come up in the review stage of the semester now. So that's in terms of actions to prevent the situation from, you know, deteriorating from safek pikuach nefesh to this person is dying. But what about what I mentioned before, actions that are themselves not life-saving, but they're the standard of care? So here we get to the information that is new for everybody, including those who were here first semester. Tzigmar and Shabbos Kuf Chav Tes. Take a look at source number 3, talking about a woman who has given birth. You may recall, for those who were here first semester, that we say that a woman who gives birth, we treat her for the first 7 days as being somebody who is in a life or death circumstance, and then for the next, day 8 to day 30, lower level of illness. So, Amar Rav Yehuda, Amar Shmuel. Rav Yehuda quotes Shmuel to say the following. Osin medura l'chaya b'shavas. If a woman gave birth, chaya here refers to a woman who gave birth, and Shmuel says, we make a bonfire for her on Shabbos. Parenthetically, just worth knowing, very often you will see medical statements in the Gemara that are attributed to Shmuel. You will see it twice in source number 3. Shmuel was himself a doctor. Aside from being also first generation Amora, who always argues with Rav and always wins on financial issues in Halacha, he's also a doctor. So Rav Yehuda quotes Shmuel in source number 3 to say, Osin medura l'chaya b'Shabbos. You would make a bonfire on behalf of this woman on Shabbos. Savor mina l'chaya in l'chol alo. So the Gemara says, I would think when Shmuel says we make this for a woman who gave birth, that means for a general patient I would not make a bonfire. Only for a chaya. Otherwise you would just have said chole overall. B'mos hagshamim in. And I would have assumed it's only during the rainy season, meaning when it's cold. That's when you do it. But I wouldn't make a bonfire for a woman who gave birth during the summertime. That's the assumption. However, Itmar, Amar Rav Chiya bar Avin, Amar Shmuel, we have another quote from Shmuel, which says, Hikiz dam v'nitztanein. If somebody lets blood, okay, you're aware, hopefully, that bloodletting at one point was state-of-the-art medical practice. It's actually still used for certain things, but not like most things and not the things that they used to use it for. But in the event that somebody underwent bloodletting, and there's a fear that after they let blood, if they get cold, it could be hazardous for their health. So if somebody did that and then its tanin became cold, osin lo medura afilu betekufas tamuz. We make a bonfire for them, even during the summertime. We don't want them to get cold. Is that clear? Is it really?
No.
So, sorry?
No.
No, of course it's not clear. What is this telling me about, the case of a chola? Right now, I have the following circumstance. I know that for the chaya, we're willing to make a bonfire. It sounds like, therefore, for a chola, we will not make a bonfire. Right? And then along comes this third case, the case of hakaza, of bloodletting, in which you say we also make a fire. Right? So what does that teach me about chola? Does it teach me anything about chola? Is this just a random statement that Gemara threw in there? Like, I don't know about chola, but I do know about hakaza. You follow the problem? I don't know what this statement did. I don't know what we accomplished with it. Ava? Mm-hmm. Right, so one way you could look at it is that we brought Hakaza to expand from Chaya and to say, no, it's not only Chaya, but also Hakaza. And then I could say, but not random Chola, because now I gave you two cases and it's only those two cases. Or I could say, no, Hakaza, yes, and by extension, all Cholim as well. I could make that argument. Bailey.
Body temperature got too cold, or there was something that was similar to the Hakaza case that would translate into a chola.
Right, maybe you require something that's similar to Hakaza, and that's the only case, but if there's a chola like it, you could make that argument, right?
I'm just being literally, very literal. Someone who just gave birth technically did lose blood, even if
True.
It wasn't in the form of bloodletting.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe that argument can be made here as far as they did lose blood, they could be cold.
So we're not really expanding Chaya at all. We're just saying there's a commonality between these two, and anybody who didn't lose blood, we're not willing to make a fire for them. It's a reasonable suggestion for sure. So this is a problem. Take a look what the Rambam does in source 4. The Rambam paskins, Osin Medura Lachaya, you make a bonfire for a woman who gave birth. Vafilu bimosachama, even during the summer, mipnesha atzina kasha lachaya harbe bimakomos akor. Because in cold areas, it's really bad for a chaya to get cold. And therefore, even if it's in the summertime, we're going to make a bonfire. She might protest and say, you know, I'm really overheated. What happens then? Not sure. Aval ein osin medura lachola lehischamein ba. But he says, we do not make a bonfire for a sick person in general. Hikis dam v'nitztanein osin lo medura filu b'tkufas tamuz. And for the case of the blood letter, then we're going to do it even during the summertime. So the Rambam's psak on this is to say, no bonfire for a chola. The Rambam seems to be saying, the reason we brought Hakaza was to say, in this case we make a bonfire, in this case we make a bonfire, and not in this case. Right? That's the way the Rambam reads it. That, I think, is relatively straightforward. Remind me of your name.
Francesca,
thank you.
How is that different than the Gemara? How is this clarifying?
Oh, all it's doing is telling me how the Rambam read the Gemara. In other words, because I didn't know why the Gemara brought in Hakaza. Was it trying to teach me it's not only Chaya, but it also applies in other cases, and therefore I would include Chola? Or was it telling me, no, only Chaya and Hakaza, and Chola is out?
So categorically, like, how do we treat a Chaya versus a Chola? Like, just generally.
So we treat a Chaya as a super Chola. A Chaya, by default, assuming we mean in the first 7 days, which we're going to actually maybe get to here, but assuming we mean a Chaya in the first 7 days, she is considered Pikuach Nefesh automatically.
Okay.
Yeah. So here's where things get problematic. Take a look at source number 5. Right now, this is not a problem. Right now, we've read it. We understand. The Rambam taught us how to read it. Chaya needs, Hakaza needs, Chola doesn't need, and everything is easy. But now take a look at the Gemara in Yuma in source number 5. Mechamin chamin lechola b'Shabbos. We heat up hot water for a chola on Shabbos. Bein lahashkoso, bein lahavroso. Whether to give it to him to drink, or whether to give it to him in order to wash him. Either way, we are going to heat up hot water. Now, tell me something. Lighting a bonfire on Shabbos, biblical prohibition, rabbinic prohibition? Biblical, right? Lo sivaru eish. Don't light a fire. It's one of those things. What about heating up hot water? Yeah, it's bishul. Correct. It's also biblical. Daniela, right?
Yes.
Yes, okay. It's also a biblical prohibition. So why am I able to heat up hot water for the chola, including to bathe the chola, but I'm not able to make a bonfire? Rebecca?
It's for a different purpose.
What do you mean? Good. So, what you could suggest, and what Rebecca is suggesting, is that this is not a problem. This is not a problem. The reason, meaning against this, I'll put over here the Yuma case. When it comes to, here, bonfire. That was terrible writing, I'm sorry. When it comes to bonfire, we're saying chola no. When it comes to bishul, to heating up hot water, we're saying chole yes. Don't worry about it. The reason is because you really need hot water. You don't really need a bonfire. That's one way you could explain it. Before I show you another way to explain it, I just want to make things worse with source number 6. This is also in the Rambam. Same perek in Hilchos Shabbos. Talking about what you do for a patient. Umadlik in loes haner. We'd light a candle for the patient. Umechabin milafanav es haner will also put out the candle in the event that it's disturbing his sleep. V'shochtin lo va'ofin umevashlin. We will shecht for this person. We will bake for this person. We will cook for this person. Umechamin lo chamin. And we will heat hot water for him. Bein lahashkoso, bein lerachitzas gufo. Whether to give it to him to drink, whether to bathe him. Exactly the Gemara you just saw in source number 5, right? Kolo shel davar, here's the rule. Shabbos l'gabei chol ha-shiyesh bo sakana harayu k'chol l'chol ha-dvarim shu tzarech lahen. When it comes to a chol ha-shiyesh bo sakana, we treat Shabbos like a weekday. Whatever you need, we're going to provide it. So now, not only do we see the Gemara in Yuma saying we'll heat up hot water for the choleh, but we also have the Rambam paskening it. The same Rambam who said you will not do the bonfire for the choleh. You see the problem. Right? Are we good with the problem? If not, okay. So how do we reconcile this? So there are two approaches. One approach is the approach of the Ravid, and that's in source number 7. The Ravid, classic, call it rival of the Rambam. Not really, he's not a rival. He doesn't rise to that level. But he's always giving the Rambam a hard time, but not this time. Aval ein osin midura l'chola l'schamein ba. Amar Avram, that's the way comments in the Ravid start. He says, Avram said, after, this is commenting on the Rambam that you saw in source number 4, where he said we don't make a bonfire for the choleh. So he says, what about the Gemara in Yuma that we just read? Perek Yom HaKippurim, Tanya behedya mechamen chamen l'chola b'shabbat bein l'ashkos bein l'avroso. Ve'efshar de b'chola sheyesh bo sakanahi. The Ravid's answer is, not all cholim are created equal. When the bonfire Gemara said that we will not light a bonfire, that's because it was a choleh who was not in danger. That's all. You're not in danger. We're not lighting a bonfire for you. What about the choleh who gets the hot water? That is a dangerous situation. We're talking about two different cholim. That's the Ravid's answer. Ah, but the Gemara didn't make any such distinction. That's true. But the Rambam did. Right? Did you notice that the Rambam in source number 6 emphasized chol ha-shiyesh bo sakana? That didn't show up in source number 4. Clear?
So it's saying that the bonfire chola is a chol ha-shiyesh bo sakana?
Correct.
And the water one is a chol ha-shiyesh?
Correct. And therefore, if I had a chol ha-shiyesh bo sakana, I would make a bonfire. Exactly, right. Exactly right. Sarah, you were going to say, or that was what you were going to say?
Yeah, I was going to clarify. Why did the woman who gave birth, why does she need a bonfire more than a sick person?
More than a general sick person?
Yeah.
Because we assume that women who just gave birth in the last week since they gave birth, we assume that there's a risk to their health, that their health is more fragile than random sick people.
But they need fire?
They need warmth. Remember that in the days of the Gemara, and frankly it's still true today, the issue of what can I do for somebody who is ill was relatively narrow. You had a whole bunch of herbal things that people did because they worked once with somebody, or they thought that it should work with somebody, and they had kind of a hit or miss thing. You had amulets, which were a lot of fun, but also I'm guessing that their success rate wasn't great. But you didn't have all that much that you could do that would actually get at illness. Controlling their temperature was at least something you could do. And especially if we are talking about blood loss as a consideration, it's true that keeping them warm becomes very important. So, you know, there is that. So I think that's why it's, why the woman who gave birth is, you know, is going to deserve it, even if random chola does not deserve it. She's considered to be in danger and to need that. So that's the Ravid's argument. The Magid Mishnah is where we're going, though. The Magid Mishnah gives me a different approach. Take a look at source number 8. Magid Mishnah, also classic commentary to the Rambam. He says, I had a different idea to harmonize the two Gemaras. V'aniya yisi savor lefarish techaya davka toch shiva. I would have explained that actually the chaya, the woman who gave birth, is only within the 7 days. That's when we're going to do this for her. Ukmosha kasavti lamala, as he says, I wrote earlier. V'chole l'das rabbeinu afilu yesh b'choli sakana ein betzina sakana ve'efshar bebegadim. But I would have argued that actually when it comes to a chole, we don't light a bonfire. Even if it's a chole sheyesh bo sakana, we don't light a bonfire. You know why? What does he say? Your turn. Why does that, yeah? Being cold is a sakana, but there are other ways to treat it. There are other things you can do. You don't have to light a bonfire. You can just wrap them up in, you know, blankets.
So why can't you apply that to, like, the chaya?
So he seems to think that won't be effective regarding the chaya. The chaya, her need is more dire. But with him, yeah, just wrap him in blankets. He'll be good. Don't worry about it. Check on him in an hour. That's the way that the Magid Mishnah says, I would have resolved this. Whereas when it comes to providing hot water, I have no substitute. I need to actually, you know, heat up the water. It's not like the bonfire. So the Magid Mishnah says, I have a different approach. Instead of giving the answer that Chola doesn't get a bonfire because he's not dangerously ill, but if he were dangerously ill, then he would in fact get a bonfire. No, the answer is Cholim don't get bonfires because you don't need a bonfire. It may be true that that's the standard of care, but it's not necessary. You can get away without it, argues the Magid Mishnah. Unlike what I just said to you before about taking the vitals, right? The Magid Mishnah is saying, even if that's what we normally do, we're not going to do it on Shabbos. On Shabbos, throw them a blanket. Whereas, heating the hot water, there's no substitute for that. So that you're going to have to do on Shabbos. Yeah? Remind me of your name.
Michal,
thank you.
Would the Magid Mishnah then apply that rule to any care on Shabbos?
Yes. Not any care that could be substituted. Right? That's the test he'll apply. Correct. That's at this stage. He's about to recant, so don't get too stuck on that idea. Others? Rebecca?
So, the rabbi said that he would say that the chola in the bonfire piece is not dangerous, but the chola in the water piece is somehow, it was like dangerous enough that he needed
it. Was a case where the guy was dangerously ill, yeah.
What does he say about in terms of, like, Makaza, breaking the solid and the Magid Mishnah? Like, they just forget about Makaza.
Right, so according to that, Hakaza was only mentioned here in order to say Hakaza warrants it like a Chaya warrants it for a Chola, not if they're not in danger. Yeah, that's correct. So the Magid Mishnah at this point has floated a second way to read these two Gemaras, but then he backs out. And that's really what we needed to see. Aval, he says, Ani mivatel daiti mipnei da'ato. He says, I recant before the view of the Ravid. Because if this person is dangerously ill, hamashma de lachol tzurachav mechalalin ve'af al pishayin b'mnias davar sha'osin lo sakana, we will violate Shabbos for any need of this person, and even if you wouldn't be endangering him if you didn't do it, even if the person could do without it, you could provide blankets instead. He says no, we do whatever is needed. The word needed already suggests it's needed to save lives. We do whatever is the standard of care. Whatever you would do if this person came into the hospital on Tuesday, you're going to do if this person comes into the hospital on Shabbos. And you're not going to go looking for shortcuts, and you're not going to go looking for substitutes. Not because of what the Ravid says, but because of an overarching principle, which he says is what emerges from the discussion about the hot water, which is that you do whatever the patient needs as normal standard of care, whether it's hot water to drink, whether it's hot water to bathe him, or anything else. If this is normal for how we treat patients in this condition on a Tuesday, then it's how we treat patients in this condition on a Shabbos, and we don't drop things because, well, it's Shabbos, and I can kind of do without that. We don't do that. Yeah?
Which source was the you just said, was that still 8?
That's still 8. That's the last part of 8. Yeah. This concept that the Magid Mishnah throws out there is also found in the Ramban, in what is a very important halachic work that a lot of people don't know about. I don't want to make people feel bad by asking who here has heard of the Taras HaAdam. So I'm not going to ask who here has heard of the Taras HaAdam. Hopefully those who are here first semester have heard of Taras HaAdam. But Taras HaAdam is a very important work of medical halacha. It is written by the Ramban. It is primarily a halachic work, but it's also philosophical. It's a guide to death and mourning. So it starts with Bikur Cholim, works its way through the halachos of medical treatment, then talks about dying, then talks about Avelos, and finally concludes with a section called Sha'ar HaGemul about reward and punishment. This is the work, Taras HaAdam. I'm not going to ask you on some test what is Taras HaAdam, but life will ask you what is Taras HaAdam if you have any interest in medical halacha. So, you know it. The Shulchan Aruch, at the end of the section of Shulchan Aruch called Yerideya, it actually follows the structure that Ramban uses in Taras HaAdam. Just, you know, I'll throw in one other pitch for the Ramban. Just in general, the Ramban is not learned enough in sort of the day school, high school system, which there are a lot of reasons for, but he's of overarching importance in every sphere of Torah. Whether his parish on the Chumash, or whether his parish on the Gemara, or whether his halachic works, or his Kabbalah, for that matter. The Ramban was in everything. And therefore, really important to know the things he says. So take a look at this line from the Ramban, from Taras HaAdam, in source number 9. Maka shel chalal de'amrinan eina tzricha omed. When we say that if somebody has an internal wound, right, the internal injury, and therefore we say you don't evaluate it, there's nothing to evaluate, you just treat because we don't know what's wrong. Lomar sha'afilu ein sham bikiyin v'chol anami eino omer klum. That means that if there are no experts, you don't have a doctor around, and the patient isn't telling you anything. Osim lo kol sheragilim lasos lo bachol. You see those words? Those are the most important words. Most important words we're going to learn this morning. Osim lo kol sheragilim lasos lo bachol. We do for him whatever you would do during the week. Mima'achalim, whether that's food, urefuos, shein yafan lacholo, or medicines that are good for the chola. Umachal in Shabbos, we violate Shabbos, ve'ein nish'alin klal. We don't ask questions. Now he does backtrack one step and he says, but if we know and we recognize, or an alternate edition says, uregilin, we are accustomed to it. Ba'oso choli, that illness, we know that illness. Shumamtin vein sarachilol, that it can wait and it doesn't need violation of Shabbos. Vaday aser lasos lo. Then we go back to saying you're not allowed to do it. So even though we just said, give him everything that you would give him on a Tuesday, okay, but if you're an expert and you've seen this illness 1,000 times and you know that that's not necessary, then don't do it, right? We're not going to light a bonfire for the patient when the thermostat in the room says it's 75 degrees and the patient is exhibiting no sign of needing heat. You follow? Yes, Rebecca.
What did we say about the internal injury?
So the internal injury, we had said by default, you provide whatever treatment because you have no way to diagnose it. As opposed to the external, we said earlier that we look to see, does the doctor know anything? Does the doctor have anything to say? So this line in the Ramban, and this idea that we saw in the Magid Mishnah, shows up in the Shulchan Aruch in source number 10. Maka shel chalal eina tzricha omed. When you're dealing with an internal injury, you don't need to evaluate it. Meaning, it's word for word what the Ramban said in number 9. Shafilu ein sham bikiyim v'chola eino omer klum. Even if there are no experts and the patient is saying nothing, osim lo kol sheragilim lasos lo b'chol. You do whatever you would do during the week. Right? Looks familiar from the Ramban. But if we really know the illness and we know it'll wait, that it doesn't need violation of Shabbos, then you're not allowed to violate Shabbos for it, even though it is an internal injury. Clear? Got it? Last point on this, source number 11, Mishneh Berurah. Mishneh Berurah tells us also about treatments that don't necessarily need treatment today. Kol shebarish she'ein b'minias oso davar chashash sakana. If it is clear that withholding the treatment will not endanger the patient, ava pisha mikomakom tzarech hulo, even though he needs the treatment, ultimately, or regil lasas lo, and it's what you would normally do, ein osin osa b'shabes, elai de eino yehudi. You won't do it. You have an non-Jew do it. Like we say, for a patient who is not dangerously ill, which is a category we'll have to discuss, we're not there right now. But the Mishneh Berurah is reinforcing for us the idea that where you really know it's not needed, don't do it. Got it? We're good? We understand how we got that way from the Gemara? If not, it's a good time to say so. Okay. So, right now, if I were to pause kind of our semester and just say, what do we know about overriding Shabbos in order to save lives? The answer is we know how you know that from the Gemara. That was number one. Number two, we know that you do it even for Safek Pikuach Nefesh. We said that as well. Number three, we know that you do it in order to prevent situations from becoming Pikuach Nefesh, although we haven't given specifics on that. We have to come back to that. And we also know that you do whatever would normally be done during the week unless you really know it's not necessary. Right? That's what we've accomplished, I hope. So that brings me to one last distinction. Now, recognizing it's already like 11:18 or so, and knowing that we're going to need some time in order to get through this last part, the quiz is going to end up being on Monday. I apologize. I don't like doing that to people, but I have to. So what it also means is I'm going to give you a 3-minute break now so that people can breathe a little bit. Otherwise, the quiz was going to be your break. Give you a 3-minute break to just breathe, and then we're going to resume with the issue of Hutra versus Dechuya. All right. So this is the last component in the discussion overall of Pikuach Nefesh, or the next to last, but the last one is a 2-second thing. It's the last big part. The issue of Hutra versus Dechuya. Can anybody tell me what the word Hutra means? Yes, Bailey.
Permitted,
like from the word Mutar. Hutra means that which is permitted. Dechuya? Sorry?
Pushed off.
Exactly. The application of Hutra versus Dechuya is let me say it differently. I have two ways I can look at overriding Shabbos in order to save lives. One way I could look at it is to say, it's like Shabbos isn't even here. Shabbos is not in the room. It stopped being Shabbos. I got a patient. The patient, I think, is dangerously ill. It's no longer Shabbos. It's Wednesday now. That's one way to look at it. That's Hutra. Everything is permitted. The other way to look at it is it's just pushed off. It's still Shabbos. And I have concerns for Shabbos. It's just that I'm justified in doing this particular activity. Got it? This particular thing is something that I'm able to do because there is a need for it. The way that I framed it when we discussed it in the first semester, I don't know if it was helpful or not, but I'm going to say it again. And those who are here first semester can tell me whether it was actually a useful distinction, is Hutra is saying essentially, I value Shabbos, but I value Pikuach Nefesh even more, and I'm not holding both of them in my head simultaneously. Like, Shabbos was knocked out of my head because of Pikuach Nefesh, whereas Dechuya is an and. Shabbos is important, and Pikuach Nefesh is important, and I'm going to try to sustain both simultaneously. You follow? A little bit of a psychological kind of distinction. Yes?
I think I'm confused, like, practically what that looks like.
So, yeah, it's very confusing as to what it looks like practically, and that's where we're going.
Okay.
So you are 100% right for being confused. If you were confused, I would worry. So this debate, is Shabbos Hutra or Shabbos Dechuya, plays out in the Rishonim. Take a look, please, at the Rosh in source number 12. He gives you, in talking about overriding Shabbos to save a life, he gives you an example from Yom Tov. On Yom Tov, the rule is you are permitted to cook in order to prepare a Yom Tov meal. Right? The Torah said, it was in last week's Parsha, Parsha's Bo, Ach asher ye'ochel l'chol nefesh, hu levado ye'oseh lochem. Whatever is needed in order to provide food for people, you do on Yom Tov. Have you ever heard of anybody saying, well, I know I'm allowed to cook for a Yom Tov meal on Yom Tov, but because it's Yom Tov, I'm not going to. That's not a thing in halacha, right? It's this is permitted on Yom Tov. The Rush says that's what's going on when it comes to overriding Shabbos in order to save a life. It's not, well, I could do this, but it's Shabbos, so I won't. No, that's not the way it works. Shabbos is mutter for pikuach nefesh, like Yom Tov is mutter for cooking. Take a look at source number 14. Number 12, excuse me. He says, Kaven de haTorah hitira lanu ochal nefesh b'yom tov. Because the Torah permits cooking for food on Yom Tov, hava lididan kol ochal nefesh b'yom tov kemo b'chol. So all food preparation on Yom Tov is like during the week. V'hachinami, here too. Kaven shehitira Torah pikuach nefesh, since the Torah says saving a life on Shabbos is permitted, havi kol malacha sha'ose b'shabbos b'shvilchol ha'sheyesh bo sakana ki'ilu asa'ah b'chol, anything that you do on Shabbos to save a life is as though you did it during the week. That's the Rush. Very clearly a hutra formulation. Got it? That's the Rush's understanding. And honestly, if I just read the Gemara, which says, v'chai bahem, v'lo sheyamus bahem, right? We saw it the other day. I'm like, well, that's obvious. That's clearly the way to read the Gemara. But the Rambam didn't read it that way. Look at the Rambam's language in source number 13. He says, "Dechuya hi Shabbos etzel sakonas nefashos, kishar kol hamitzvos." Shabbos is pushed off when it comes to danger to life, just like all mitzvos are pushed off when it comes to danger to life. Now, Rabbi Yosef Karo wrote which books? Yeah. Beit Yosef and Shulchan Aruch, and I mean, there were many more books, but sorry?
Yeah.
What were you going to say? Kesef Mishnah, correct. The Kesef Mishnah is also Rabbi Yosef Karo. It is his commentary on the Rambam. Usually, when you learn a halacha in the Rambam and you want to know where the Rambam got it from, your first stop is to look at the Kesef Mishnah, because the Rambam isn't going to tell you. He's not interested in telling you the sources. He does not show all work. But the Kesef Mishnah likes to give you the sources. Here, on this halacha in the Rambam, he doesn't quite provide a source, but he says it's like a Gemara in Psachim Ayin Zayin, in a completely different area of halacha. It's the issue of Tuma Hutra Betzibur or Tuma Dechuya Betzibur. The rule is that in the event that the community of Jews are majority Tame, you can bring communal karbanos, even though the people doing it are tamei. And the question is that hutra, like it's mutter, this is fine? Or is it dechuya, it's pushed off, but we're going to try to minimize it, and we'll try to do it in as tahor a way as possible. So take a look at source number 14. He says, this is Rabbi Yosef Karo, in his Kesef Mishnah on the Rambam, Beperaketz Adzolin, if legu tanoi, tuma imhud dechuya betzibur o hutra. He says, in the Gemara in Pesachim, the Tanoim have a machlokis as to whether Tumah is just pushed off for the sake of a communal karban, or whether it's actually overridden. This is all permitted. Umashma b'Gemara de halacha kemanda amar dechuyehi. The Gemara seems to conclude, that Tumah is dechuya betzibur. What that means in practice, so to give you an actual practical example of this, is it Francesca, right? Yes, okay. So to give you a practical example of what the difference would be, I know the majority of Jews are Tamei. We need to bring their karbanos anyway, because we override Tumah for a communal karban. But if I have a Kohen who I know is Tahor, should I dafka use the Tahor Kohen? If I say Tumah dechuya betzibur, then yes, you have a Tahor Kohen available, use a Tahor Kohen. If I say Tumah Hutra B'tzibur, then no, everybody's equal. Doesn't make a difference. Okay, that's an example in the Tumah discussion. It's easier in the Tumah discussion to give an example. So they have a debate in the Gemara, and the Gemara concludes Tumah is Dechuya, and therefore if you can use a Tahor Kohen, you do so. And the Rambam Paskins that way. Umashma dehikihechi deiflagu betuma hachanami iflagu b'shabbos lagabei cholem hidechuya uhutra. So Rabbi Yosef Karo says the Rambam is saying the same debate applies when it comes to overriding Shabbos for pikuach nefesh. Same issue. V'kaimalan kemanda amar dechuya, and we follow the view that says Shabbos is not hutra. Shabbos is dechuya. V'kakas of Harashba. Veharan shashabes dechuya he eats a chola v'lo hutra. That's the view of the Rashba. That's the view of the Ran. That they're going to say Shabbos is dechuya. Yes.
Like, Ali. Yeah. He's saying that if you can push off pikuach nefesh till after Shabbos, then you should.
He's saying that if you can reduce what you're doing on Shabbos, you should do so. Yes. Essentially, yes. So that's the idea. Yes, Francesca. Yeah. The rule is that karbanos can only be brought by people who are tahor. Right? That we know. We're good with that? Okay. What happens if everybody became tameh? Now what do you do? Example. We're going to rebuild the Beis HaMikdash, God willing, sometime this week. But not everybody's going to have access to ashes of the Parah Aduma immediately. Like, that's just not happening. So we have a mitzvah, bringing a karban tamid in the morning and in the evening. What are we going to do? Well, on the one hand, you could say, so there's, you know, some set of Kohanim who get access to the Parah Aduma first, and they're going to go first and do the avoda. Or do I say, no, we're majority Tameh. Therefore, any Kohen is eligible to do it, whether Tameh or Tahor. If I say Tumah Hutra B'tzibur, then the rule is any Kohen can do it. I'm allowed to do this B'tumah. If I say Tumah Dechuya B'tzibur, then if I have the option of using Tahor Kohanim, that's what I ought to do. So saying Tumah Dechuya says, you have Tahor Kohanim available, use the Tahor Kohanim. Got it? Sure. So the Rambam in the Laws of Tumah says we go with Dechuya, and the Rambam in the Laws of Shabbos says also for Bikuach Nefesh it is Dechuya. That's the idea. The Kesef Mishnah says that the Rashba says that also. I brought you the Rashba in source number 15. Sorry? No, he said it's Dechuya for both, according to the Dechuya for both, according to the Kesef Mishnah, reading the Rambam. Sure. So take a look at the Rashba. The Rashba was dealing with a medical halacha case. This is one of those really fun cases in their medical halacha. We talked about, in answer to Gali's question before, that a lot of their medicine was, you know, temperature-oriented. Their medicine was also food-oriented. I don't know if I have vegetarians here. Vegetarians will not appreciate this. However, only in the Gemara can you find a medical prescription of this person needs a hamburger. That's the thing. In the Gemara. Like, this person needs to eat meat. This is what's going to make them better. And now the question is, what do we give them? Do I have to get kosher meat for them? Can I give them treif meat? Pikuach nefesh issues. So it becomes an issue on Shabbos in particular, because here's a fascinating question. You have a guy who is ill. The doctor says, this person needs meat. The only meat I have available right now for them is meat that is not kosher. It was not shechted, it's nevela. The animal died without shechita. On the one hand, I could say, give them the nevela, right? Because that's what's available. Or I could say, no, shecht for them so that they can get kosher meat. If I shecht for them, I'm violating Shabbos. But maybe that's okay because this person is in a life and death situation. You follow? What do I do? Do I shecht for them violating Shabbos? Or do I give them a nevela so that I don't violate Shabbos? That's my question. So take a look at source number 15. The Rashba writes, Shamati me echad migdolei harabanim shehayed mishem harav Rabbi Meir me Rothenberg. I heard one of the great rabbanim testify in the name of the Maharam Rutenberg, Shahora lahatir lishchot, afilu b'makam sheyesham nevela lahachilo. He said, on Shabbos, we shecht in order to give the patient kosher meat, even though you have non-kosher available. But the Rashba says in his responsum that he's writing, the logic that they gave me didn't make any sense. So I'm going to give you a different reason for this. I agree with the ruling. I don't agree with the logic that was given to me. Vahu harav shehigidli kein dato. V'tamo mishum dim ein shochten lo yavo lidei sakana sheyemna milechol anavele v'yamus. He says, the rabbi who sent me this said to me, you know why you have to shecht for this patient? Because the patient's going to refuse the nevela. I haven't eaten treif in my life. I'm going to start now. The patient's going to refuse the nevela. That's why we shecht, because otherwise you're not saving his life. However, the Rashba says that's not the reason. V'li nira, I think, shakol toli b'machlokes im nomer Shabbos dechuya o nomer Shabbos hutra itzalchola. The question is Shabbos dechuya or is it hutra? Ukiderach shamru b'tumah, just like is tumah hutra or dechuya. Lamanda amar dechuyahi. According to the view that Shabbos is dechuya, ma'achilin lo ha'nevela, you give him nevela. The non-kosher, the non-shechted, shoot sarach le'achol beinanu over him lishchot lo, because I don't want to override Shabbos if I don't have to. Right, Francesca wanted a dechuya case. I guess this is a dechuya case. We're going to say, I have treif meat to give him. I don't need to override Shabbos in order to shecht for him, so I won't. Shabbos is more serious than kashrus, so I'll override kashrus. I won't override Shabbos. Is everyone following? I'm getting worried, because again, I'm hearing a lot of typing. But you're hearing what I'm saying? What the Rashba is saying is, if you say Shabbos is dechuya, then you're not going to shecht for this patient. You're going to give the patient non-kosher meat. Because I have to choose, which one am I overriding, Shabbos or kashrus? I'm going to choose to override kashrus. That's the idea, because Shabbos is dechuya. Shebamakum sheyesh lo baser leachol, he has meat. Lo navarani anu velo nitchas Shabbos. We are not going to now override Shabbos. Ukemeduma shahalacha kamanda amar Shabbos dechuyahi velo hutra. And the Rashba says it appears that that's our view. Shabbos is dechuya, not hutra. That's the idea. And then he goes on to say that he goes on to discuss, what if there is no nevela available? Who am I going to tell to shech? Do I ask a non-Jew to do things? That's its own discussion, which we'll have to get to, but I'm not going to do that right now. Bailey.
Correct. So he's like, his overall statement is that Shabbos is dechuya.
Correct.
Okay.
And that's why the Kesef Mishnah said the Rashba holds this. This is the Rashba that he's referring to. Danielle.
I'm just a little confused, because I thought we said that the rule is that you can't shecht.
So he's saying no. If you had no meat, then yes. But if you have nevela, he's saying since Shabbos is dechuya rather than hutra, we're going to say use the non-kosher meat and don't shecht.
But I thought the ruling was the same, just the reason.
Oh, you mean the ruling that he got from the Maharam? Yeah, no, you're right. He's actually ruling against that. You are correct.
That's true.
You're right. He's not with the Maharam. That's correct. The Maharam permitted the Shechita, and he says, no, we will not do it. You're right. This is against the Maharam. Thank you. Last support for the idea that this is dechuya. That clock is usually fast. Yeah. Okay. Last support for the idea that this is dechuya, Rabbi Zrachya Halevi, also known as the Baal HaMa'or. You know what? I'm not going to rush it, because that's not going to serve anybody's needs. So what we're going to do is, on Monday, God willing, we're going to start by wrapping up the Hutra Dechuya discussion. Then we're going to do the quiz thing. You'll have like 15 to 20 minutes or so for the quiz. And then we're going to go further from there in getting down the basics of Shabbos and Pikuach Nefesh. Okay? Good? Thank you. Have a good Shabbos.